Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the weekly show. It's brought to you by Levi Solicitors, levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball, to get your 10% discount on your legal fees. Dan, Michael, and Rob with you today on episode 254. The first part of this is where we rattle through the latest Leeds United news, and we're going to start with a quick plug around the Gary Speed anniversary. Obviously, we lost Gary Speed 10 years ago at the age of just 42. A lot of feelings have been stirred up over the past week. Before we sort of deal with that side of things, we've got an event at the Holbeck this Sunday night. Obviously, we're playing Brentford. After that, we've got an event to raise money for mental health charities. We've got Hayden Evans down there. So if you saw the Phil Hayes show the other week when we spoke to Gary's former agent and one of his best mates up until his death, it was really good one. It's really informative. Always good to hear from Hayden, just to humanise a footballer, because often we don't, do we? So it was really good to hear from Hayden. He's going to be there with Popey, Adam Pope, on Sunday, 8 o'clock, the Holbeck. If you want to go to that, go to slunglow.org and then go to the What's On bit and you can get tickets for that. It's only a fiver. Money's going to charity and it'll be really, really good. So if you're knocking about in Leeds on Sunday, go to that. So yeah, 10 years has passed.
We have just had Simon Grayson confirmed for that.
Is that correct? Oh, exclusive.
So there's now an extra, a bonus person there. So he's been wrongly fired, hasn't he, Grayson? Once again, he's left his job there. So yeah, but he's going to be there. Obviously, he'll have played with Gary as well, won't he? And he
signed on the same day, didn't he? I think.
Yes, in his younger days. So yeah, it should be really good. It's slung low, do everything, pay as you feel, basically. So I think it's a fiver, but it's all for charity. So more in.
We'll be down there. Yeah, we'll be down there. We'd love to see you down there. I think Michael's going to be drinking, so if he's going to tell you how we're going to get relegated.
I've booked a travel lodge in Leeds, so I mean business.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point at which you were debating whether to go cheaper than that. When you what's the travel lodge cost you?
It was 33 quid.
Right. Bit extravagant, is that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit. That's the cheaper of the two travel lodges.
Okay.
I didn't want to go for the premium one, did I? Down by Beebe's.
Is it the Discovery Inn that's by the
stayed there before
Scabber
as well.
Taps? I've stayed there before. That's... Yeah, that is bleak.
That is a little. That is an odd place.
If you're an out of town fan who hasn't got somewhere to stay and has ended up in the Discovery Inn just by the station, it's. Describe it in a word.
Bizarre. Like, I remember there's like loads of different stairs and lifts, and you have to walk like one lift, then you have to walk along and go up another lift.
It's like several buildings all stapled together, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very odd.
But anyway, back to the thing about Gary Speed as well, and. We've been saying on the podcasts and shows around this that if there's one good thing to have come out of what happened with Gary Speed, it's that it's just opened up that conversation now, and it feels like we're so much further forward 10 years on than we were when Gary Speed died. I mean, it was a massive wake-up call for me, personally. I can remember just being so shocked and waking up on that. It was a Sunday morning, wasn't it? Because he'd done Match of the Day or the Football Focus the day before. Mm. And we saw that really poignant video from Dan Walker, wasn't it, who posted footage of that day. And that got me as well. On the day of the anniversary.
I think it's one of those things with things like this, people often don't maybe give it sufficient consideration until something directly affects them. And even though, you know, everyone affected by Gary Speed, very few of those people actually knew him personally. I think we all kind of felt like we did. And so everyone had a bit of a, I guess, almost a bit of a stake in it, in this as a thing. And it maybe changed people's perceptions of it from being something that happened to other people and that something that happened to people who were, you know, well, it's kind of unhappy with life or whatever. All of a sudden, you were like, "But that's Gary Speed. Speed's great."
Well, when you are in the public eye, you become public property to a certain extent, don't you? Whether you want to be or not, And I think that's probably the case with Gary, because he was manager of Wales and he was on Football Focus, and then suddenly he's gone. I didn't realise that he was 42, and I mentioned that before. Like, you know, you see patterns in these things, and I've sort of mentioned in passing. I struggled when I was 42. So last year, it was around when we got promoted in the summer of 2020. I was at my worst when I was 42, and I hadn't realised this until the anniversary came up this time around. And I saw that it was 42 years old, and it just, I don't know why, it just chimed with me, because your brain recognises patterns or sees coincidences, doesn't it? And I was not in a good place that summer, and actually getting promoted was part of the thing that that lifted me out of it. It just resonates really closely, because suicide is just a huge killer of men under 45. It's the biggest in the country, isn't it? So if it's opened up the conversation, and I don't mind talking about it on here, I mean, I never got anywhere near thinking about suicide, but having dealt with depression and anxiety then, it's quite close to home, just knowing that he was suffering and he couldn't talk about it and he couldn't externalize it. And we saw what happened, and it was just the worst outcome imaginable.
I remember being down at the ground shortly after it happened, kind of leaving, people leaving flowers and stuff. I actually found a copy of Square Ball with him on the front, and I took it down, and there was people like press there and media and stuff trying to get little chats with fans. And even in saying, I don't want to do it, I nearly cried to the person who was there. They were like, do you want to say a few words? And I was like, I can, thank you. Yeah. And it was, I think that's how people were about it at the time and still are about it now. Like 10 years on, you would think it had kind of, it might have gone away a little bit, but it's one of those things that I think still really affects people. And obviously we had Hayden in, who was one of his good mates, but you could tell reflecting on the whole situation and on memories of Gary, it was all just so difficult for everyone still. But it's, yeah, like you say, I think some good has come out of it in the way that people now talk about stuff.
You saw that in the interview in The Athletic that Alan Shearer did with lots of his former teammates who'd played with Gary Speed at different clubs or countries, and just how they were kind of able now to open themselves up and be vulnerable, I guess, is a kind of a sign that they could talk about that now, which I guess in the past, and they are all that age range, which you were talking about, which stereotypically struggle with that kind of thing.
Yeah. As we say, the conversation has opened up. I found the reason why I don't mind talking about it is because it helped me deal with it at the time, because I told you, I told Phil and stuff when I was, you know, going through this stuff. Like, I ended up referring myself to therapy because I thought, I cannot carry on feeling like I'm feeling right now. This just, something isn't right. And I felt like I was going to feel that way forever, because I thought, this is not who I used to be. So I ended up referring myself for help, thankfully, and it worked quite quickly for me, because I was a fairly mild to medium case as it was diagnosed. So yeah, keep talking and, you know, keep drawing attention to it. And if things aren't right, just talk to your mates and reach out to your mates and speak to them. You know, that text where you just send a text to a mate, you all right? It counts for so much, doesn't it? You don't always realise.
I am now in a WhatsApp group with like my mates kind of went to football with, and while it is mainly like people being absolutely awful in there and slagging off Tyler Roberts, the question is regularly asked, like, everyone all right?
Yeah.
And people do talk fairly openly in there about stuff. And I don't think that would have happened without Gary Speed necessarily. So it's trying to find progress in something bad, I think is what we're trying to
do. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's brought up things like Andy's Man Club, which is one of the charities that we're supporting, because you may have seen the announcement. If you haven't, we've got the video on YouTube. It's referred to on the website. We've got a short podcast episode that me and Michael just knocked together a few days ago, little 8-minute explainer of the charity walk that we're doing in May. So it's the back end of May. Go back and listen to that 92-mile walk.
But don't sign up for it.
You don't want people to sign up in anymore.
No.
How many people have signed up?
I've got the spreadsheet here.
And we're showing an interest, not signed up.
Well, these people who are saying they want to do it. How many were you anticipating when we did this?
Well,
it's 92 miles. It's a long way.
Yes, yeah, so you're walking from North Wales. It involves several overnight stays. North Wales, Gary's first football pitch, back to Ellen Road via the mural.
226 people have signed up. We can't. 226 people can't do it is the bad thing about this now, because great that everyone wants to do it, though. But we'll have to find some way of doing this, because I don't know what it is at the moment. I kind of thought we'd have a problem in that maybe like 60 people might want to do it, and that would be, you know, logistically a bit difficult. 225 plus is becoming a bit of a problem. So we'll get back to you on that. If you've signed up, thank you for expressing an interest. But shit.
Do you know what? It's a great demonstration of the power of the messages, not our message, but just this notion that Gary Speed was such a high-profile figure who took his own life, and we need to keep talking more. raising money for good causes, the amount of interest is huge. It's brilliant.
It's one of those things that we could have done a different 92 mile walk for a different charities, I think we would have been in more of the ballpark of 30, 40 people signing up. We've gone, this is for Gary Speed, and everyone's gone, yeah, I'll do that. It's fine. I've never walked more than a mile before. Never mind. I'll have a go at this because it's for Gary Speed. So it's brilliant. But it's also a problem.
So yeah, we are raising money for, it's Andy's Man Club and the Samaritans. We're going to split the money between mental health charities, and it's going to be a good laugh. Rob, are you coming along?
I believe I've been signed up, which I didn't know about, but maybe, yeah.
Yeah, we should have hope. We are going to, at this point, as we mentioned on the other podcast, we're going to be working on stuff like funding, sponsorship, transport. It's all going to get sorted now. Now we know that we've got a huge amount of interest. It'll be probably coaches rather than minibus, won't it? But we're going to document the whole thing as well. So it's after the end of the season. We'll take recording equipment with us, phones, you know, all that sort of stuff, and we'll get video. We'll get audio, we'll turn it into a show so you can kind of join us along the journey and see how much we suffer and see how much of a mistake we make going into the final day. As I said on that show, my birthday is the final day. So let's hope that we don't get shit-faced going into the final day, which is a 20-mile walk from Huddersfield to Leeds or something stupid.
Yeah, it's a small bit, that.
Yeah.
That's the easy part.
But thank you if you have expressed an interest. We will get back to you is about... size of it.
And in the meantime, come along to this event. It's slunglow.org/shows. Is it /shows? Yeah, that'll take you to the page where you can book tickets. And yeah, cheap beer there as well, which I know.
That's why you're going, isn't it?
Always worth considering.
Yeah. So yeah, Hayden Evans, Adam Pope, and now Simon Grayson confirmed as coming along. So please do come along and show your support for that after the Brentford game if you're knocking around in Leeds and Holbeck. And there should be a few people around because we're playing Brentford on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see what Angus Kinnear says in his program notes for Brentford, which I presume are being penned at the moment. There's been a bit of a hoo-ha about the stuff that he said in the programme for Palace. Quite a lot of criticism of the fan-led review of football governance. What do you make of this? Because there are bits of this where I read, and you know, I should say, like at the start of this, I like Angus Kinnear. I found him really engaging when he's coming here and spoken to us. And you know, we've talked before on the show about the pint test. I can have a pint with Angus, no problem. Some of this I don't agree with. Some of it I do, and I have sympathy for it. But I don't know. Some of it feels misplaced. Do you think?
There's a lot of self-interest in it, I think, is the thing that you need to look at. These criticisms are not necessarily unfair in all cases. The stuff he's saying about how independent regulators are not always great, that is true. But then equally, industries do tend to always want to regulate themselves because they know that's how they can get away with more stuff.
Yes.
Like if you ask any banker, do you think banking needs more regulation? They'll say absolutely not. If you ask a gambling company if they think that gambling needs more regulation,
we'll regulate it ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Cigarette people would be like, no, it's fine. Stop getting involved. We'll tell people it might be bad for them. It'll be fine.
Now, the problem for me, I mean, I get the, because he mentions the government, and you know, we don't need to get into politics, but I don't have a great deal of faith in the present government to organise oversight of football or oversight of much, to be perfectly honest. But I think the message is fairly clear. This is a fan-led review and fans don't trust football to regulate itself. That's what I took from the report, which I've read all of it and I broadly agree with pretty much all of it. And it's fan-led. It was done with consultation with fans. So fans don't trust football enough to look after itself.
I think, he doesn't quite know his audience here, does he? I don't quite know who these notes are intended for, really, because they're in the programme, which you sell to fans. And they've put them on the website, which is unusual for the fans to read. And you're taking aim at a fan-led review, which maybe isn't the wisest idea. I don't know. It seems strange to me. And it's weird because I think Leeds are quite good at staying quiet a lot of the time. And I know some people get frustrated with that. I don't mind it, to be honest. But then when they do seem to try and grab the narrative a little bit, it seems to go awry and we end up in Myanmar or... Radrizzani calling for a breakaway from the football league.
Let's address that because I've pulled the quotes from interviews he did around. So it's 3 years ago now. So back end of 2018 when we were in the Championship and he said, we need to consider another way to create a Premier League 2 that can be sustainable, even for the teams who are not promoted. The time is getting ready to consider what to do so we don't have a crisis every 2 years when a club go bankrupt. All the clubs should open a discussion to see how we can change this league so it's sustainable. So there's an acknowledgement there. It's not sustainable, as Steve Nicol would say. All right. That runs completely counter to what Angus Kinnear has said in his programme notes, that football is actually dead sustainable in this country. Well, what has changed in the 2 to 3 years, sorry, since we saw that interview? The only thing that's changed is we're in the Premier League and now we've got a much larger slice of the pie. But we were in the Football League calling for a bigger slice of the pie there. We wanted a redistribution of wealth 3 years ago because we didn't feel that we were getting enough. And now we're getting more than enough. We don't want to redistribute the wealth. It's self-interest, unfortunately. And I think the club comes out of this looking hypocritical. And I do have sympathy for the position because, you know, do we want too much interference in football? I'm quite pleased that Derby's chickens are all coming home to roost right now because it feels like they were financially doping their way to the playoff final. And we abided by the profit and sustainability rules when we were in the Football League. So credit to the club for that. On this, though, I think they've got it wrong. And the Radrazzani thing closes out by saying, it's not for me. Hopefully I'm going to, I think he's saying it's not for me to regulate. Hopefully I'm going to the Premier League very soon, which we were, but it's for the sport and the fans and the clubs. So Andrea Radrazzani said it's for the sport and the fans and the clubs. So the fans have had their say and said, we don't trust you to run football. And this is not you as in the people at our club. I think they're pretty decent, but football as a whole. And yet, since we've got in the Premier League, we're now being told the opposite message.
I think as well, it's trying to make an argument essentially that the regulations that have been in the past haven't worked because as Leeds fans, we've seen this, the owners and directors test, fit and proper person, whatever it's been called over the years, has given us Bates and GFH and Chiellino that we've had to suffer through. But I don't feel like the correct argument is therefore to say, well, don't have any more regulation then. The argument is to say, well, just do better regulation. If that is the problem. And just saying, Kinnear makes the point that, well, all these clubs have survived. It's like, well, yeah, that is true. And they do survive. But ultimately, clubs survive. They go through, as Derby will probably find out, clubs go through a spend and then bust cycle. And then at the bust cycle is when fans pay all of their money to get them going again. It's not that they're only sustainable because people are unwilling to let them die. It's not because they're sustainable as businesses, because they're not. They're sustainable on the face of it that people will always just continue to support them. They have the knowledge that you can be as bad as you want as a team and a certain number of people will continue to give you money, and that isn't a business.
I think to give it a bit of context, I think football is moving towards, and in the Football League in particular, is finally moving towards self-regulation because they tightened up all the financial regulations around fair play, profit and sustainability. Like I said, they're finally getting some teeth with clubs like Derby. So I think we are getting closer to a situation where they're less risk averse and the regulations are actually starting to count now for clubs. But is it enough? And is there enough in there that's going to fix the problem as a whole? Because is there a problem with football?
There is a problem, and it's of... Admittedly, the way I would like to restructure football would involve completely tearing up the existing structures and stuff. And obviously the club would be completely against that because it would mean that all the money we have earned by being promoted now would be kind of gone. But like I would rather have it so that the Premier League isn't so cut off and it isn't a case that relegation is less about a sporting sanction and more about, oh, we've lost all our money now and we need to try and get back in there as soon as possible. It feels like in the old days, getting relegated was bad because you had to play worse teams and you got to go down, you had to drop down a league and you had to try and get your way back out of it. But the money wasn't so ridiculous that it was a case of, well, we're knackered now. Like, whereas it feels like now the money is everything. It's more than the sport is.
Well, I mean, this is the thing as well. The thing that's at the root of this is the gap between the Football League and the Premier League, which is exactly what Radrazzani was speaking about 3 years ago. That's the truth of the matter, isn't it? That huge, huge disparity, and doing something to make football make that less of a problem, because you're asking for... I mean, look at what Newcastle. So if Newcastle go down this season, they're going to face huge financial challenges next season because they'll have a massive wage bill, they'll have parachute payments, but even still, they've still got to comply with all the profit and sustainability losses.
Well, they have, but they'll actually do
by their way straight out
is assume they're going to get out straight away, make sure they do, and then it's not a problem.
Well, so that brings us back then to the parachute payments. So let's imagine a world in which Leeds United do go down this season. I think Leeds United would take the parachute payments, don't you? Rather than reject them, because he's talking about clubs, is Kinnear talking about clubs being self-sustaining. Well, that's not self-sustaining, isn't it? Is it? It's taking the parachute from the Premier League in order to survive. So the existence of parachute payments, they argue, is what shows there is a problem with football finance because they want to do away with them. I don't think for one second that Leeds United would turn them down. So,
and I'm pretty sure in the Championship, weren't we arguing that we should have been, owners should be allowed to put more money in?
Well, that's the point I was making about the profit and sustainability stuff,
makes them more likely to be unsustainable. Essentially, in the short, as soon as that money is withdrawn, it makes them instantly unsustainable, doesn't it? So it's, yeah, I would, as I said, my ideal version is completely tearing up ownership structures and league structures, which is clearly not going to happen. So it feels like any kind of review would be playing around the edges of things anyway, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's face it, this is not going to go anywhere, is it, anyway? No. These things never do. You get recommendations, everyone pats each other on the back, and then everything carries on broadly as it was before, or you get watered down versions of it.
And as Kinnear's pointing out, you know, these are privately run companies in a privately run organisation.
Which is what I do have sympathy for. Like, say, Derby have been badly run. We had our turn of being badly run, and we paid the price for it. They're paying the price for it. So it is self-regulating to an extent, but the slight difference is that, you know, clubs are community assets. And as you say, Michael, it's always the fans who ultimately end up stepping in and bailing clubs out of the shit. You know, like Bury and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the people who cause the issues are never the ones who actually pick up the problem at the end of the day, are they? It's people who still want somewhere to go and watch football on a Saturday who go, well, in that case, I suppose we'll have to start another club and we'll start again in the Conference North or whatever. And it's for those people that it is bad. And that they would, like, if you're a Bury fan, you would be able to say, well, clearly something has gone wrong here. Mm. I guess the point Kinnear is making is, well, is this wouldn't make any difference anyway to those teams. But then maybe if ownership was structured properly, it would.
With a bit of oversight. And then you force them, because the point he makes is about, you know, they'd have blown all their money on Pavel Chybotsky anyway, which that to me is an admission of part of the problem then. Mm. Is that, okay, you might send some more money down the pyramid, but also enforce tighter financial controls than we have at the minute.
It's notable he didn't use John Kevin Augustine as well as the example for that punchline. Exactly.
Well, never heard of him. Eddie Nketiah is where it's at. Would you take Eddie Nketiah because he's turned down an Arsenal contract? Looks like he's going to be leaving in the summer. Or have we moved past that? Has that ship sailed now? Would you have him back?
I suspect it hasn't sailed enough for lots of clickbait websites to start linking us with him constantly for the next 6 months. I wouldn't particularly be in a rush to re-sign him, would you?
Probably not.
Did he fit?
I think we'd still have to pay some money for him as well, wouldn't we?
Because he's under 24.
Yeah, so I think we'd end up still forking out for him.
Joffy's the future, isn't he? Eddie's old news.
I think so. I mean, he went back to Arsenal, didn't he? Because he wasn't getting any game time with us, and has not played since then. He's a no scored goals in the League Cup, but
that was quite a big mistake, wasn't it? Really,
from us or from them? It didn't
benefit us, obviously, because we ended up with Augustin, and he didn't get the game time, and he's just kind of fizzled out at Arsenal. Whereas you think maybe, you know, you stick it out for another 6 months or whatever at Leeds, and at least, you know, lay a marker down and show that when you're playing regularly, you can score regularly, because he was putting a few goals in.
Well, that's the weird thing about these loan moves where clubs want guaranteed minutes, because they're sending young players out to be learn how to be proper footballers, but part of being a proper footballer is being out of the team and trying to get back into the team. Whereas he comes to Leeds, he probably maybe could have had more opportunities. He was a twisted bollock away from getting a run of games, but it didn't happen. So then rather than see whether he can fight it out and be a proper footballer, they just call him back and he's sat in their reserves for 2 years or whatever.
Ah, oh, well.
And he was in the brief time, he scored some important goals for us. He scored with Brentford coming up. He scored the winner in that, didn't he? Which was, you know, when you look at how the season ended, that 3-point swing over Brentford was probably key, in the running. And then he got came off the bench at Barnsley, didn't he? And was scored an important goal there. So I don't know. It was good for us, but whether or not, you know, he's going to be 23 at the end of this season.
Too old.
Well, he's not.
Can't go in the under 23s, can he? Then
he's not.
If he's 23,
that's not a young player anymore.
No, it's not. Is
23. Okay. You need to. I'm glad that he's leaving though, because Arsenal would probably just keep hold of him otherwise, and then he'd be there. He'd still be having the same problem at 26. He'd be like, "Oh, I've still not got any games."
Speaking of the 23s, they played away at Man City, and we got Pat Bamford back. Played the full 90 when he wasn't necessarily supposed to, but injuries forced their hand there, didn't they? And Luke Ayling. So good to see those like back into the fold now. And we were winning, and we lost.
He looked really good, did Bamford?
Yeah,
I thought he looked. He looked very much like Pat Bamford of old. There was I didn't particularly think he was rusty. Admittedly, he's playing against, you know, a under 23s reserve team, but they're a very good under 23s in Man City. It's worth saying, you know, they've had essentially a decade of unlimited money to invest in youth development, and you can see it's kind of worked for them.
And that Man City winner, I haven't seen this, but Klaassen made a mistake, didn't he?
It wasn't great, was it? The ball he actually played all right. He made a few decent saves, which how he has been playing recently was an improvement. But then, yeah, right towards the end, it looked like he'd gathered, I don't know if it was a shot or a pass now, I can't quite remember. And then suddenly the ball had squirmed free and they'd scored in the last minute. And yeah, as much as we're talking about January targets or a midfielder or a striker or things like that, maybe a grown-up goalkeeper.
Bring in a 36-year-old journeyman goalkeeper.
He does worry me every time I've seen him, I have to say. I know there's the caveat of it being under 23s and it doesn't matter in his learning and stuff, but then when you do think he's like a broken finger away from being in our first team for several weeks.
And there's a lot at stake.
It's kind of worrying.
Because we don't want those parachute payments, do we, baby? No. Right, on to something about us, so forgive us for this indulgence. We were nominated for the FSA Awards again, weren't we? Which is like the 10th or 12th year on the bounce. Did we win? We didn't win.
We didn't win.
But thank you if you did nominate us. We didn't expect to win this one, did we? We were in the fanzine category this year. We won the podcast one last year, which we weren't in this year, and we didn't attend. But Rhys Lowry, who's one of our illustrators, he attended on our behalf, didn't he? And he seemed to have a jolly nice time.
He did.
With the freebies on the table.
And Graham Smith of the YEP was down there. They also didn't win. I mean, admittedly, they were up against like the Guardian in their category, which is kind of tough competition.
I mean, it's a Guardian Award, is that one? They've won it every year.
Yeah, I think they have won it for like 8 years in a row now, Newspaper of the Year or something. So, but yeah, it's, you know, nice to be nominated and all that. And I love Supreme, the Sunderland fanzine, which, you know, it is good. I remember in the very early days.
I was going to say, we had a good look at that, didn't we?
Yeah, in the very early days, I think it was like after we'd made one issue of Square Ball having taken it on, and I was shopping around for other fanzines to kind of see what they were doing.
This was in the 2009 era where I think I was doing the design for it at that point, and I didn't know. I self-taught based on YouTube tutorials, as you can do with anything in life, really.
Yeah, so it was a basic-looking thing, wasn't it, to begin with? A far cry from the sort of magazine now, but we did get a copy of that and go, oh, okay, you could do this sort of stuff. That's interesting.
So not inspiration, not stealing. Inspiration.
Yeah, we. I suppose it changed our opinion slightly of what fanzines could look like, because Square Ball had been very basic before, and then this looked a bit more like a normal magazine, and I think from issue 2 or 3, then it kind of went a bit more that way, and then some professional people got involved and made it look a lot better.
But as Billy Bremner said, you're getting out for coming second, so we got no. YP didn't get out. Well, they got a free piss up, so that's fine, isn't it? Sort of thing, sort of price you like, Michael.
Exactly, but yeah, next year. There's always next year.
Yeah, and congratulations to A Love Supreme. That's the point there as well. Very very worthy winners, so fingers crossed for next year.
They need something, don't they, Sunderland, at the minute? they're even more mired in League One than we were, so I think they've done their time now. I'd let them out, to be honest. Little Lee, let him free.
Busy old week at Square Ball Towers, and we are not done yet. We're going to be back in on Thursday to record the Phil Hayes Show, which will be out on Friday, our podcast that we do along with The Athletic with Phil Hayes. And we're going to hear from Phil on Angus Kinnear's programme notes as one thing. I know one thing he wants to talk about as well is something he hinted at in his match report for the Palace game, which was like the scale of the job that faces Leeds United next summer, assuming that we stay up. Big job?
Assuming we stay up.
Well, on that, Phil will be talking to us about the points haul, how right he probably was about these last two games with Brighton and Palace, and hopefully beat Brentford on Sunday. And everything's looking rosy, isn't it?
It is, and Phil can give a nice a balanced and grown-up view on Brentford as well.
Rather than us children in here. We are far more grown-up on the Phil Hayes Show.
Yeah, we try.
And you can read all Phil's stuff, his thoughts on what happened against Palace on The Athletic. Use our sign-up code as well to get a 50% discount. theathletic.com/thesquareball.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In this bit, we're going to preview Brentford at home on Sunday. Due to the tight turnaround of the games this week, obviously we had Brighton at the weekend and then we've had Palace on Tuesday night. It's now Wednesday afternoon that we're recording this. What's the Brentford preview looking like in our notes?
Rob?
Now, you know, we forgot to put Palace on when we previewed Brighton. What's happened
again?
Yeah. So we are going
to games.
We're going to assemble this plane in midair, me, Michael, and Rob.
I mean, let's be honest. The prep is a few screenshots of whoscored.com and us slagging off some things about it, and we can do that without any prep. So
Thomas Frank, Pontus comes back.
Jonathan Douglas is good in their midfield, isn't he? And
yes,
Stuart
of
Dallas,
Tiamani Diogaraga. I forgot his name.
Dave.
Then. Dave, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, all the great Brentford lads that we've had over the years. Yeah, they're really good, aren't they? Apparently.
Well, they're going to stay up comfortably, according to the pundits, from the early weeks of the season. So while we buy ourselves some time, I'm just going to look at the Premier League table and see exactly where they are.
How did we end up having a rivalry with Brentford?
We didn't. It's just because they were near us in the table and they thought it was a thing.
Yeah, I find it weird.
And Thomas Frank's a gobshite. We called him out on it, and that's about the extent of this so-called rivalry. There is no rivalry.
Okay, good. That's the end of that.
I mean, there was the nice bit when they got promoted and Pontus in his post-match interview on the pitch
made it all
just
about
started talking about Leeds, which is nice. That's his... deep rivalry.
It's the ex that he can't let go of, isn't it? Split up with her, but just cannot let it go.
Just started talking about Bielsa, didn't
it? But you're married now to somebody else, Pontus. Yeah, but you know,
he's very much still thinking of the ex during, isn't he? Clearly, it's like, I know I've been promoted with Brentford, but I'm just going to imagine this was Leeds.
So let me just look
at how much better it would have been.
The midweek fixtures. Now they're playing on Thursday, which feels a little bit mean.
Good. That's something for our mate Thomas to have a moan about.
So they're playing Spurs, although it's still London, so they're playing Spurs away on Thursday. They're the 7:30 kickoff, though, not the 8:15, because that's Man United Arsenal. And then 2 o'clock on Sunday. Are you in favour of 2 o'clock on Sunday kickoffs?
Nah, not really.
No.
Although it's better than
better than half four.
Yeah, or indeed quarter past eight, which did feel a little bit too late last night.
So Brentford they've played 13 as it stands at the minute, 1-4, drawn 4, lost 5, so they're only a game or so better. You know, one victory better than us. They are on 16 points. We're on 15, having played a game more. There's some maths in there. Don't know what it is. But we go above them, presumably, if we beat them, if they lose to Spurs this midweek.
Yeah, I mean, they started the season well, didn't they? They were, even when they drew some games, they were playing really well. And then they've had a very poor run, but then they did beat Everton.
Yeah, they've had that thing. They probably will stay up.
I think they will, to be honest. But there are worse teams.
Yeah, they're in that honeymoon period of Premier League, aren't they? And you do look at them and you see what's happened to us this season and the whole second season syndrome thing that'll get thrown at them next season. But they've done fine, haven't they?
They have. They're a decent team. In fairness, the 2 years we were in the Championship with them, they were one of the better teams in there, weren't they? And they always looked fairly well equipped for the Premier League as well, I thought. Like, the style of play and stuff always seemed like it would probably translate all right if they did manage to get up. And it does seem to have done. So I guess fair enough.
It just seems like the reality of the Premier League, you know how it's kind of bit for us a little bit this season? It's biting for them now after they had the bright start. But then there's that kind of drag where you seem to lose quite a lot of games.
Mm.
You know, like we've played 14 and we've lost 5 of them already. So at, you know, out of the 14 games we've played, we've not won 11. That's why it's felt like a real drag this season, hasn't it? Even though it's probably, if you keep that sort of form up, then we'll be all right, but it's not exciting, is it?
I think probably losing 3-1 away at Burnley for Brentford will have been a game where they've been like, oh no.
I think they lost to Norwich as well, didn't they?
They did.
I feel like, I don't know, you guys are confident they're going to stay up, but I feel like if you lose to Norwich...
Yeah, it does leave it on the table, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's a bit worrying, yeah.
All you need is a bad run of form, as we've seen, that you can leave yourself down there. I guess the danger is for the clubs that are down in the bottom three is that they get, you know, other teams pull away from them. And like Burnley have got a couple of games in hand, but you have to say Newcastle have got a huge challenge on now. It's December and they've not won a game. And I don't think anybody's ever escaped from that position before, having not won the first 14 games or whatever. So
has anyone ever spent £1 billion in January before?
No. But who or what are they going to spend it
on? Yeah, that's the thing.
I was reading as well that they've they've sort of shelved plans to appoint a sporting director for January, so they're going to be potentially spunking a load of money without anyone kind of leading who's going to be actually signing them.
Eddie Howe in charge of your transfer policy.
Which has always gone well.
Just him. Who was the person who signed up from Liverpool for like 20 million?
Solanke,
yes. Could get him in. Another 20 million.
Just signed everyone from Liverpool, didn't they? Jordan Ibe, who I don't think has their club now. But
I mean, Newcastle is a different proposition to Bournemouth in terms of, you know, it's much higher profile, but they're in a really difficult bind in that being bottom, who's going to want to join them now, apart from people who want an absolute shedload of money?
I was going to say, there's someone that wants the cash.
There are very few professional footballers that in the Premier League that are going to see that as an attractive proposition now.
Mm.
It's going to be somebody who's going to say, well, I'll tell you, okay, then I'm prepared to go down and then get promoted again. So you're shopping in a particular pool of players, aren't you?
They should have the decency to just do that. Just accept relegation. That's what I think they should do in January. Sell players, if anything. Send Maximan to us for, well, we need more wingers, don't we? £40 million.
Which is too much, and I think less than that.
And then they can just go down meekly, is what I think they should do. So they can take up one of the places. I wouldn't mind Brentford going down, to be honest. Just because...
Thomas, you're thinking of Thomas Frank, aren't you?
They're not really a Premier League team, are they? I know we are going to fall foul of... people saying, oh, you know.
Entitled wankers.
You know, you can't say that. But just.
Look, Angus Kinnear.
Look at the Daffodil Stadium.
Angus Kinnear said in his controversial programme notes that no one's got a God given right to be in the Premier League, least of all Leeds.
And he's right, but it doesn't mean I have to like them being there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just rather they weren't.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the ground.
I feel like it's weird in that I feel like everyone's opinion of what the ultimate Premier League teams should be is kind of based upon when you're about 13.
We got Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, like Sheffield Wednesday, that's fine. They can be in. I'd even like Swindon, I think, might be all right in there for a bit, or Oldham.
Yeah, I'd weirdly think of like Portsmouth as being a Premier League club.
Even though Swindon shipped 100 goals when they got relegated.
Yeah, exactly. They were terrible and weren't in the Premier League for very long at all. And yeah, like Portsmouth now are a million miles away from it, aren't they? But it's
Charlton.
Like, when you grew up with a team there, you sort of think, oh no, that's acceptable. And I think that's why I just can't deal with Brentford in the Premier League, because it just feels so wrong. It felt weird when we played them in the Championship at one stage, never mind playing them in the Premier League. So, and yeah, I mean, just looking at the last game, you know, I assume it was sold out, and still under 17,000. You can't build a new stadium that's 17,000 to be in the Premier League.
Can they expand it? I think they can on one stand, can't they? But they're so hemmed in by three railway lines that there's not a lot of room to do much there. And is there even the demand is the question, isn't it?
Just go down.
It's easier.
It'd be for the best. It's nothing personal, like, but anyway, they're going to beat us now, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they wear this stuff like a badge of honour, though, don't they?
Yeah, they do, in fairness. I don't think they're massively annoying as a fan base or anything. go on.
No, just one or two moments when we were sort of milling around with them in the league, and just there were some accounts that were just, when we got promoted, you know, just having a little pops at us about us blowing it, and actually we ended up winning the league by 10 points. So it was nice to give that payback. And I know that, like, Besotted, I think we may even follow one another on Twitter, that's their fan channel / podcast and stuff, who were dead reasonable and, you know, all that when we first started following them. But I think somebody in their fold has gone a bit wild and likes to just start digging everybody out, including us.
Oh, well.
So hopefully we'll beat them, and then they'll get really upset. That's all I want. But we haven't talked properly about Thomas Frank, actually. I think he's part of the issue with them. Has he been more humble since they've come up or not? I know he was very deferential. I saw a bit of Sky Sports News when I got in last night, and he was being very complimentary about Conte, because obviously they're playing Spurs this midweek. And he was saying he's one of the world's great coaches, and he was kind of, you know, well, hopefully we can get something, which is very un-Thomas Frank-like, who normally is chewing gum with an open mouth and declaring that they're the best team since sliced bread.
I think he did before the playoffs last year say the same thing again, where he's like, yeah, we're going to win it. It'll be fine. You just don't learn it. Mm. And they've got this, I think they're all well-liked kind of by neutrals, because there's this humble club that do everything the right way. But then you think, well, your manager's like the opposite of that, isn't it?
Yeah, he's just always got, I've always got a bad vibe off him.
Careful.
It's fair to say. He's just a bit cringe. I find him, like, his whole laid back, long hair, middle-aged man. I don't know. There's something I feel unsettled by about him.
I know it's bad to shame people's appearance, and, you know, God's sake, you know, by all means, pick on me. But I think he's keeping his hair long to hide his ears. He's got old man like goblin ears. Have you seen them? They're very long.
I haven't, but I'm gonna know.
He's got very long
Thomas
ears.
Frank ears.
Yeah.
Let me just do some live googling of his ears. I see what you mean. Yeah. Although he's cupping them on one of these pictures, which is maybe unless he's midway through hiding it. He's just about to pull it around the front.
But yeah. you do get upset at men with long hair, don't you? Middle-aged men in particular.
Is he too old to have long hair? I don't know. Maybe some people with long hair are still pulling it off. He's got a very... How can I describe what's wrong with him? He's like a sort of... someone's,
you can do it that's not in a way that's not going to get us in trouble.
In a way that's not libelous.
Yeah.
Okay. He's like a teacher who's trying to be like mates with you, even though you're thinking you're about 30 years older than me, mate. This is weird.
Okay.
Is that fine?
I think so.
Okay, cool. I'll leave it at that.
Right, I'm just looking at Brentford now on Who Scored, which, as you said, is part of our the extent of our research. So I don't want, I've got a video from Liverpool autoplay. Go away. But we've got loss, win, loss, loss, draw, win. So it's just patchy form, isn't it? Loss to Leicester.
Attack through the middle, long balls, playing in their own half.
Mm.
And they're good at attacking set pieces and aerial duels.
What does that mean then? Let's have a look.
Means they're going to head in some corners.
Okay.
Maybe.
Weak at keeping possession of the ball.
Would Pontus celebrate, do you think, if he scored?
Yes, but he'd try and make it out like he was being considerate of the home fans, I think. Do they play three at the back? Is that right? 3-5-2.
What reception will Pontus get?
I think it'll be a bit pantomime, I think. I think he'll get a good reception and he'll go to the crowd to sort of engage with it. Like he'll go on the front foot and like he'll be giving applause to everybody, but he'll get booed during the game if he does, you know, something.
We've played him before, haven't we?
Yeah. And it was the Nketiah game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually fairly low key, wasn't it? I think everyone expected there to be a bit more happening, either him trying to make himself the centre of it or trying to, you know, going over the top with kind of applauding the home crowd and stuff. But I think in the end, not much happened.
I've got a lot of love for Pontus still. I still hold him in really high affection, I think.
I know he had the sort of sat on the advertising boards drawing attention to himself thing, and he was a bit like that sometimes. But yeah, I mainly have very good memories of him. The sort of the early days of Pontus, he was pretty much the best thing about us. And for a centre back, he was hugely entertaining, which was
watching him celebrate tackles and corners and things like that. Yeah. Was a lot of fun at the time.
He was good fun in a time when Leeds mainly wasn't. So fair play to him.
Yeah, I like him, and I like all that side of him. Maybe it didn't quite fit for Bielsa, and that's why he bombed him out unceremoniously. Mm. You know, sold his, what he described as his best player at the time, didn't he? Despite that, he's got to go. If he's not going to toe the line, he's got to go. But Pontus himself seems quite philosophical about it, apart from banging on about it in that interview at Wembley nonstop for about 10 minutes. Having just been promoted with Brentford.
And he's got his Premier League time now, hasn't he? Yeah. As well. I think that was the thing. It felt like when he didn't go up with us, then didn't go up with Brentford, you were sort of thinking, for his sake, this is maybe a bit of a shame, even if the team plays for us, no business being in there.
I do like the idea of him though, because he was so passionate with the fans and he was always kind of trying to rouse the atmosphere, and then he's gone and signed for a team with a 17,000 stadium.
It's in London though, isn't it? You get to live in London for a bit, which some people like. How do you think this one's going to go? There's a lot less pressure on this game, it feels like, now, because we beat Palace. Palace, is that the platform now for this game? That you would hope that when Sunday comes around, we're building on what we saw there, which, you know, we didn't dominate from start to finish, but we were far more convincing and we're competitive probably for the 90 minutes.
And we might have Bamford back. Mm. Well, you'd think he'll at least be on the bench after playing a full game for the under-23s. Well, so that'll make a difference.
That is the other question. Would you play Tyler Roberts up front again?
If Bamford's fit enough, I'd put Bamford in. If we're convinced he's sharp enough.
He was knackered in the second half. Bamford, of that 23s game, like he wasn't meant to play the full 90 and it showed. So I would be happy for Roberts to start and Bamford on the bench.
It's just nice to have options again, isn't it? I think
exactly, yeah, just being able to look to the bench and see some grown-ups is nice.
I think that, you know, you play Tyler Roberts for an hour and give Bamford 30 minutes or whatever it might be, and it's a good solid sub that you're bringing on, isn't it?
Luke Ayling off the bench as well, potentially, for when we're having to move Stuart Dallas around, which we inevitably are.
Ayling did a nice flop about 5 minutes in. He was like, all right, he's back. We're good.
He's not lost it. Having criticised Palace for diving.
If and when the pair of them come back, would that put us then to full strength?
And Robin Koch.
Koch, yeah. Keep forgetting poor Robin. Mm-hmm. I've seen more comeback videos from him than...
Yeah, they keep posting them down there on Instagram.
Hundreds of them. Yeah, nearly there.
Did you see his little raffle giveaway thing he was doing?
And Click got involved.
Yeah, that was nice on the... It was on Instagram, wasn't it, that thing?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, you kind of forget we own Robin Koch, don't you? Because he's spent so much time injured since we've signed him. But
I genuinely had forgotten about him, so sorry. Sorry, Robin Koch. How do you think this one's going to go?
I think I did predict 4 points from these three games, so I suppose I have to say we're going to lose.
You don't have to. You can revise it. You're allowed to change. That's the beauty of this. It's football, isn't it? You can make it up as you go along.
I think we'll draw.
I said after Brighton, I'd take 5 from 9. Mm. So a draw would take it up. But I don't know, after Palace, I just feel a lot more relaxed and feel like I can go to Elland Road on Sunday and try and enjoy it. Whereas last night it was getting there and just thinking, God, I hope we don't lose.
I think the other side of this is you look at teams like Palace and Brentford and to an extent Brighton, but Brighton, like you said, they might have a bit of a number on us when Graham Potter's there. They're all just in this middling group of Premier League clubs, some of whom are slightly better than others on the day, every day where Brighton are concerned. But there's nothing to fear from this, is there?
Shouldn't be.
Why are you so worried?
Just because.
Let's not bully you into being positive.
No, exactly, exactly.
Come on, be even more negative.
Let me be miserable. We'll scrape a point. Why? With a shit performance.
Why so fearful, Michael?
Just because I don't think we're fully in gear yet. And I feel like on the day, most teams could probably take us in our current state because we've not been brilliant at any point. But nor have Brentford been, clearly, because they've lost loads of games. Yeah. So,
and we might be brilliant on Sunday. That's the thing. There's always a chance that it will click.
That is true.
You know, we've made it this far in the season without being really convincing and we're sort of floating around lower mid-table. Be all right.
That's if you think we'll win.
I see no reason to doubt this team. I love them all dearly and I've got confidence in them. Rob?
Yeah, a nervy win, I think. I'm confident.
How nervy is it going to be?
Very.
This is Tyler Roberts' day, isn't it?
How many days have we said that?
Well, he's got like one in 44 or something like that, his goals.
Yeah, I mean, he's one Premier League goal, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Which was at the end of last season when he had about 4 attempts at it against Southampton. I mean, he's not looked near to score. He didn't look near to scoring the other day, did he? Against Palace, but against Brighton, I mean, he had a few shots.
He just worked really hard last night, Roberts. And I remember watching him again. I can't remember if it was against Leicester, but there was a moment where he did his thing where he did a nice turn and then gave the ball away. But then straight afterwards, Stuart Dallas was on the floor and managed to win the ball and get it to a Leeds player. And you think, that's what you need, just a bit of like bloody mindedness. Mm. And I think last night, and maybe with Bielsa's comments about him needing to, as long as he's fighting for a place here, then he can stay under me. I think, yeah, maybe he's just got a bit more attitude to now, hopefully, after last night.
So Tyler Roberts, hat-trick and a win.
Yeah. Now, I view these results almost on I guess it's like a spectrum now, rather than you've either got the loss, the draw, or the victory. But my view kind of, it's somewhere along the scale, if you like. So I'm soft win territory at the minute.
Right.
That's how I feel. Given
2 points.
Yeah. Given the current state of mind and the confidence levels and the fact that people are returning, I'm kind of veering towards the idea that at some point it clicks, like it did in the first half against Spurs. But if we can build on the victory against Palace, I'm sort of, yeah, I'm about 2 points is about where I am. And that's a good description. What about you?
I'm probably similar. I was looking today at the goals in our games recently. You have to go back to the Liverpool game and still, since someone scored more than 2 goals in a game. So yeah, but I don't really see that changing the way we play. And so I think it'll be a low scoring
Two clean sheets on the bounce as well. Let's not forget that we are building something, like we've tightened up at the back.
I mean, the Brighton game, they had some really, really good chances.
Yeah, but they didn't score though, did they?
And Benteke should have.
Didn't score though, did he?
No, but should have done.
So? The chances in every game.
Yeah, I know.
And Spurs' goals were so fluky. This is just how it works. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you're unlucky.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I'm not willing to pat ourselves on the back for brilliant defensive performances and include Brighton in it. Last night, I thought actually we did do pretty well. There was just the Benteke chance, and giving away one chance in a game isn't actually that bad. But against Brighton, it felt like they, on another day, would have, if it wasn't Brighton, because they never score, on another day, another team would have had about 4 in that game.
So we're both soft win. What are you going for?
Soft. Can I have a soft draw? Or is a draw just a draw?
Is that on the side of defeat or is that on the side of victory? I'm not sure.
It's a 1.2. which is still not nearer to victory, is it? So, yeah, a solid draw.
I mean, Angus Kinnear's talking about, you know, how we regulate football and stuff and we should consult the fans. This is what we need to do. We need to change the point system completely. So you can get 1.2 points. You can get 2 points. It's fine, isn't it?
If you get 1.2, does the other team get 1.2? Or do they have to?
0.8, I think.
I was going to say, if you've been the worst team in a draw, you get less.
Yeah, so Brentford get 0.8 points, we get 1.2.
Okay.
Everyone's happy.
A nice decimal sort of league table with points all over the place. Excellent.
Much love to Levi Solicitors, who help us to bring you the podcast. You can get 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. A reminder, they do all sorts of stuff, whether you're moving house, loads of people get into that sort of jazz, don't they, in the new year. The house market tends to blow up in January. Have a look at Levi's so you can get 10% off your conveyancing. Or they do loads of stuff for business as well. So if you've fallen out with your boss.
Dispute resolution.
Yeah, you've got to go on telly to tell everybody you've not fallen out with your boss. I mean, I don't know if they could encourage you to do that or what, but they do personal and commercial dispute resolution.
Could be useful.
And it'll be 10% cheaper than for all the other folks because you've gone through us. levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball for full details. The third part of the show is where we do heroes and villains. We pick the good and the bad from the last 7 days. The first half of this is the Ken Bates Villain of the Week Award. So this has kind of taken on two different characteristics. We've got the stuff we received from our subscribers post-Brighton, which is not necessarily as jolly as the stuff that we receive post-Palace, which is fine. There's a hell of a lot of feedback to get through here. So should we do it quite quickly?
I think we'll have to. Let's pick on, I mean, Pawson, just because he gets on
the ref, yeah.
Yeah, quite a lot for Firpo, all obviously from the Brighton game.
Yeah, Connor, Aiden, Ender and Hilton among the nominators.
Yes. Yeah, lots for them. Jamie Redknapp got a number as well for trying to stir up the Calvin Bielsa spat, which I think is fair enough.
We're going to talk about that a bit more as well with Phil Hay on the Phil Hay Show this week, so look out for that towards the back end of the week.
Lilac got some.
Yes.
As a colour.
One for you, Dan.
As a colour, as a kit. Philip says, give us a Vivid Away kit, not the watery piss lilac one.
It's strange, isn't it? I think I may have said it at the start of the season when these kits were shown, like we've got white and blue and then lilac, which seems to be somewhere between the two. It's there's not enough contrast there, isn't it? But it has provoked a response apparently from the Premier League, as it always tends to be. It's when Leeds do something, then we'll actually act on it, which is consulting people from a colourblindness point of view, because it was a difficult watch. I'm not colourblind, but fix it. Give us a yellow away kit. That's all we want.
Sally March got a nomination for having a ridiculous name.
Seems fair.
Seems absolutely fair. And also the fact he nearly scored within seconds. Robert Sanchez, the Brighton goalkeeper, for getting in the way of Tyler Roberts' shots and providing and proving Moscow right.
See what Gouldy says as well. Such a character.
Such a character. Yeah. Graham Potter gets two nominations, where Wisconsin Todd nominates him because he thinks he's overrated because he's English and minimally competent.
He looks like he might play keyboards in a bad prog rock cover band. I could imagine Thomas Frank being in the same band, actually.
That's a good shout. I'm trying to think of what other managers would be joining him now.
We'll put together a manager's band. Yeah, okay. And I suspect he takes as much satisfaction out of rocking the pitch wheel on ELP's Lucky Man as he does perennially fielding a team with no strike threat.
And Potter related, Danny Mills through the dumpsters is one of the is his username on it. But he's annoyed with himself for seeing how Brighton play and kind of wanting Leeds to get Potter. So presumably doesn't think he's overrated. Strange mixed thoughts.
And that's a villain nomination for both sides of that argument, right? Fine. All right.
Yeah, he's nominating himself for thinking it.
All right, okay. Trossard gets nominations as well. Trossard for being a Peaky Blinder wannabe. Cockalorum. Like that. Just a Belgian Dennis Wise. That's Mad Ken who's put that one forward.
Very bright and shout out for Victor Orta as well from Joe. A terrible hit rate on his signings. What has he seen in Firpo?
The second half of the Palace game. Presumably is the answer to that, he would say. Yeah, the South Coast. Gary's asking, if playing on the South Coast, has the London curse spread? We said it's London by the Sea.
Southampton as well. That was very bad.
Known as what by the sea? What's Southampton known as?
Portsmouth by the Sea.
That's also by the sea, isn't it? Yeah.
Correct. The whole team got nominated. Philip and Baps McGinty nominated them in the wake of Brighton.
These are the questions being asked. Are we losing our mojo and enthusiasm for the system? And probably not, I don't think.
Oh, they're digging me out now as well. A sinking feeling who's obviously very cheery. Hates my optimism on the Phil Hay Show. Just stop. No, I will never stop being optimistic. And Rick, who was having a go at me, which we mentioned at the start of propaganda, wasn't it? Says I'm trying to make this like fucking talk sport, in Rick's words. No, I'm not. Shut up. Rodrigo got nominations. Roger and Soldier Wilson. Soldier Wilson, despite this being the villain section, says not a villain. But so disappointing. That was mentioned by somebody, I can't remember who it was now and where I saw it, but maybe we should just say, like, we're disappointed in you. There's a disappointed section, like a subset of the Villain of the Week award.
Yeah, I have seen that chance back, and why didn't he just sweep it?
It's not great, is it?
There's just no need for it to, him to even be involved in his right foot there. Just side foot, left foot, straight into the corner. Absolutely no problem.
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't take that first time.
I think I last night, having seen it live, I thought it was a harder chance than it was. But yeah, no excuse.
Fine. Brighton fans get mentioned by Zach Webby.
Yeah. He but, did.
Why were they booing? They're eighth.
I know. And Graham Potter is soon to receive hero nominations for calling them out for the booing, which is equally fair, I think.
Chris nominated football for wanting football to be fun again. That was in the wake of Brighton. It got fun again, didn't it, in the 93rd minute last night. So that's fine. On to the post-Palace nominations then. Who have we got? Kevin Friend, yep.
He's a character, according to Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
Gallagher got a few as well, for whinging, mainly, and a bit of diving. I think
just on Gallagher, sorry, Tom said he constantly dived and he looks like Jimmy Bullard's love child, have Levi's on standby.
Which links him to Jody Morris as well.
Yes.
So guilty by association. yep, that's fine. If we're going to nominate other old midfielders, Michael Brown for on BBC Sport, apparently saying that Palace were very, very unlucky that the handball was given.
For the penalty. Yeah, Jam picked that one out. Thank you, Jam. Which it wasn't at all. I mean, like Patrick Vieira said it was a penalty.
The hand was like, his arm was fully extended. If you're allowed to handball it in that way, you should always just jump with your arms in the air because you massively increase the chances of stopping a header.
I will say, if you go back and watch the Amazon Prime coverage of that, and I say I watched like just the last sort of 10 minutes last night, if you watch it from the penalty being given through to the final whistle, just how sad. What's his face? Who gave the penalty away?
Mark. I don't even know.
Okay, yeah.
Matt Gooey.
Big G. If you look at his face, just as there's a camera keeps cutting back to him, how sad and disappointed he is.
With himself?
Yeah. Just the whole situation. You can see him just internally just stewing over what's happened. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely love it. IU got picked out by James, Tom, Roger.
Yeah, and on the same theme, really, Zaha, for the pair of them for diving. It was interesting, actually. I didn't put any clips of it in, but I was saying last night that I once criticised Zaha for diving and being a general pain in the arse and a moaning bastard, and got a load of Palace fans laying into me. They were actually having a bit of a go at him.
Palace fans.
They referred to him as a little bitch, and told him to man up on some of the clips I heard of him. One of them was particularly annoyed. He's like, Dallas has won the ball. Just stop moaning. Get on with it. I was like, oh, good. You're seeing what we all
have
see
you
now.
Marks them clips by any chance?
Not worth it, is it? Do it in the return fixture.
Yeah. But it's good to see that I like Zaha's now getting shit from his own.
Yeah, well, Tom's comment actually says Zaha isn't even half as good as he thinks he is. I mean, he's clearly a talented player. There's some nice stuff he did, like good footwork, I thought. But then Stu just kicked him and kicked the ball away.
Headed the ball away, didn't he?
Yeah, on the floor, yeah. Gary Kelly levels of header in that, wasn't it?
Mm.
And I did enjoy this one from this no-named person who says, if Zaha doesn't get villain of the week, then this whole fucking thing needs shutting down. What a massive fucking cockwomble that moaning prick is.
Correct.
That sums it all up, basically. Amazon, yeah, no business making his kickoff at 8:15. Is it right what LUFC stats said, that that's our latest ever goal that we scored last night at 6 minutes past 10? He seems to think it's the latest goal we've ever scored in history.
I can't think of any others. Unless we had a European game that went
European
to
away, wouldn't
it? Have no European games gone to extra time? We must have had games that have gone to extra time.
Maybe a league game. We'll
have a maybe a league game, yeah.
I'm not prepared to try and verify myself.
I was going to say, we've had cup games go to extra time that surely have gone on beyond.
Probably.
Then.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Well, I'm just saying. Yeah, I am doing, because I think it was the stat was probably a league game.
Ender picked out John Champion and Ali McCoy. Was it John Champion on the commentary? I thought it was Drury.
I actually don't know. I was there. They weren't sat next to me.
Either way, it was good. I mentioned over on Propaganda, I like the commentator. And I was sure it was Peter Drury.
I like McCoy for just sounding like he's enjoying what he's watching, which is kind of a rarity among football commentators.
You see, they've picked out for the most fucking insipid commentary during the Palace game. That's what Ender says. Whereas I like that more sort of standoffish commentary, because I did mention over on Propaganda, if you've seen it, I did say it was Drury. I thought it was Drury, but it was, if it was John Champion, my apologies. But I enjoyed that kind of just stand back and let things unfold. It's the right way to commentate. It's better than having pointless stats thrown at you all the time or crap anecdotes.
Not having four people commentating on the same game. It's like, I don't need to hear all these people.
Although they did go to Clattenburg, didn't they, around the penalty. Mm-hmm. They cut back to Clattenburg in the studio. What was it, Mark?
Why have Amazon built their own studio? No one else has. Did you notice it last night?
Well, I couldn't miss the fucking thing. It was massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, no one else has. Everyone else has managed it.
I don't know if you noticed, but the angle of the windows, where it was built in the southwest corner, the angle of the windows, you couldn't see all the pitch from that. You'd have to either go right into one corner and sort of lean out, or watch it on telly.
Watch it on Prime on a delay.
Yeah.
within the box. Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Yeah, they got Amazon got a few nominations. Aiden, absolute wankers for the 8:15 kickoff.
Yeah.
Why was it 8:15 as well?
Well, so they can play the 7:30 fixture, and then what'll happen is they get more views, I think, that way. So they can say, well, we've got this many Premier League viewers. So you can watch the first half of one, and then you're likely to flick over and watch the start of the other one, and then you get two views out of each viewer, I think, maybe. I don't know. You used to work in telly advertising.
But it would have made more sense.
Not that they're advertising.
If they staggered them properly so you could watch both, it would have made sense. But having them so you can't watch a full game just seemed weird. I'm sure there's some reason behind it. They seem to be doing all right, don't they, Amazon, to be fair?
Amazon, yeah. Yeah, they're doing fine. Yeah.
I think they're all right. They're going to space and stuff, aren't they? So.
Amazon as a whole?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, running the whole thing from there where there are no taxes.
Niche complaint from Joe about the cop toilet users. Folk are walking to the cop toilets through the exit door. Yeah, it happens a lot.
I feel like I'm playing Takeshi's Castle at times. Takeshi's Castle is a great reference. With doors being sprung back in my face at an alarming speed. Yeah, fine. Happy with that. Patrick Vieira gets a nomination. Matt from Munich nominates him for his football shaped and sized head.
Yep.
It is very spherical, his head.
Mm.
I didn't notice as much when he was playing. I think it maybe as he's put a little bit of post playing weight on, it's turned an already round head. Garth Crooks was the same. A young Garth Crooks didn't have such a round head.
I know. Carl Pilkington is always picked out by Ricky Gervais as having a head like a fucking orange, is what he says, like perfectly spherical head. And Garth Crooks, I would say, has got a perfectly spherical head.
Yeah, not when he was playing. Yeah, it's something that's developed as the cheeks develop in middle age, that you get the perfect sphere.
Good old jowls, eh? And Angus Kinnear gets a nomination for his programme notes.
Mm. Shock horror owners and executives wouldn't want to be regulated.
No.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were saying.
And the nameless one says, I wonder what Bielsa would think of those comments. Particularly in light of the fact that Bielsa was speaking about football being commodified even more and more and it getting worse as a result.
That someone has chosen to submit these comments without a name. Yeah. Could it be Bielsa?
I think so.
I think it probably is. When he's not fighting Calvin Phillips, he's sending in mean notes about the management of the club.
Lawney's having a dig at Bielsa, though, for his reluctance to try something a little different. Last night against Palace, from about 65-70 minutes, we were crying out for a change up front that never came. Joffrey had more touches, collecting the ball for our numerous second half corners than Roberts got in the entire half. 15 or 20 minutes of Joffrey would have maybe given them something else to think about. We got lucky in the end with the pen. Not that I'm too bothered we won. Well,
I was looking at Gelhardt quite a lot over on the side, just thinking, like, is he ready to come on yet? Because it did feel like he was crying out for something different.
As we saw against Wolves, he's got that ability just to pick the ball up and cause trouble for people running through the lines, hasn't he?
And he just likes shooting early as well, which, I don't know, it feels like Roberts wants a decent chance to shoot, whereas, like, we saw Gelhardt have a couple against Spurs, didn't we? He just takes shots on early and he sees the chance quickly, I think, in a way that maybe, even in a way that Bamford doesn't, to be honest, as well. Like, in that he just, his first thought is always trying to score goals.
Yeah, I don't feel like we can give Bielsa a fill another week.
No.
And I'm not really disappointed with him either. You know, the end justifies the means, doesn't it?
And Will Hughes got a nomination as well. Didn't do anything. This is from Brian. Just having to look at his stupid blonde Derby head.
Yeah, was Will Hughes? He looks a bit like a ghost, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a very pale boy.
Particularly when you put him into the Derby kit as well, which is monochrome.
Did you know he played for Palace until he came on?
Nope.
That was a nice little.
He was at Watford for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I feel like Watford to Palace is a move no one notices.
Yeah, that's a fair.
People just be like, "Wow, much of a much." Well,
if you got up a pub quiz and said, and the question was, "What is footballer Will Hughes' current club?" You go, "Who?"
Like, yeah, it's weird he's still playing. I mean, he was like Grayson era playing for Derby, wasn't he, as a youngster? Mm. So,
right, there's your candidates. Villain of the week.
I'm tempted to buy Redknapp most just because he's so annoying, and I don't like being mean about our players.
Well, we could give it to Zaha either, although he was pretty unsuccessful, so.
Yeah, he hasn't really upset us so much as just been a mild irritant.
Yeah, if he'd been good, it'd been more annoying.
Yeah, because there's this narrative being sown, isn't there, that Calvin has had to nip in the bud with a post-match interview. And it's people like Redknapp who have caused that narrative to be sown.
That's the thing, you've seen it grow and grow and grow to the point where Phillips was saying, even Leeds fans are asking him about it or saying that he's had a falling out with Bielsa. Mm. And it all just comes from Jamie Redknapp not understanding football and not seeing that Calvin Phillips has played in a back three loads of times before.
Mm. Yeah. Is he having it then?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Can we hear from his dad?
He's a top pundit. He just said something like that.
Thank you.
Again, I didn't get enough wobble then.
No. Do you want to try again?
No.
You need some Patrick Vieira cheeks, don't you?
I don't actually feel very well today. So I've got a bit of a headache, so I'm not going to do it again. It was a mistake.
Like so many things. Right, let's do the Gaetano Berardi Hero of the Week Award. Nominations for... let's have a look. All the Leeds ones, first of all. Roberts, Melier, Leeds fans. Forshaw gets a lot. Gary Speed, of course. Dallas, Rafinha, Dan James, Strouk, Cooper, for a variety of different reasons, all fairly self-evident, I think.
I mean, the Roberts ones are all from Brighton, yeah. Admittedly, which...
Can we say from Moscow?
That's possible, actually, yes. A number of pseudonyms. Well, but
there's such an irony that Sean has said Tyler because we need to hear a giddy Moscow, so we could give it to Roberts in the absence of Moscow, just to spite him.
Could do. Let's see how we get on with it. Melier gets loads of nominations as well. Philip nominates him for having really, really long arms. And that was after...
Arms like rakes.
That was after Brighton, but I think the long arms were key yesterday, weren't they, in dragging that one back from the line. I've watched that so many times, and the...
It still goes in, doesn't it?
And the number of goalkeepers... I'm trying to think back of all the goalkeepers we've had, and I'm not sure anyone else gets to that, including like Nigel Martin, who's probably the best goalkeeper I've seen play for Leeds.
Jordan Pickford with his little T-Rex arms. Not a chance.
And Paddy Kenny's not even diving, is he?
No,
he's not even turned around it. By that.
Just watching it in. But yeah, the fact that he's in the wrong direction, manages to spin around, and he does, because he's had to grab it in a panic as well, he has two goes at catching it.
Yeah.
But because he's so quick and long-limbed, he's able to do it and still keep control of the ball. So yeah, he's possibly our best player this season, is Melier.
Yeah.
I'd say he's probably been the most consistent.
Rafinha?
Yeah, maybe Rafinha.
He's doing all right.
He's doing fine. He is doing fine.
What did Rafinha get his nominations for? The dance? The goals? Threat all game?
I mean, Islo Paul did criticise him, actually, for doing the skip on the penalty as well.
Yeah,
his heart can't take it.
Nearly killed all of them. So that's what I was saying last night about those, you know, when you have 1,000 thoughts run through your brain in that split second when stuff like that's happening. And it was torture. It was like being bombarded by doubt and paranoia and fear, and
when everyone went silent as well.
Yeah,
we didn't need that.
on that same penalty, actually, Adsham nominated Northeast Corner bloke. So special mentions to the bloke in the Northeast Corner who broke the silence when Rafinha stuttered with, "What are you doing, you knobhead?" just before the ball hit the back of the net. Brought back happy memories of Lusoga, Geraint Box, you fat
character,
yeah, etc. Yeah, I had the same thoughts. Like, no, just kick it.
But he kicked it in, and that's the important bit.
He did indeed.
Nice mention for Dan James from Adsham. Well done, you little scum bastard.
I thought he had a good game.
Yeah,
he did so much work. And in terms of his decision-making, it feels like that's getting better. I particularly enjoyed the knock it past the man and run past him, like in the school playground kind of vibes. He's like, he had the number of Joel Ward. He knows he's faster than him, so he's just going to kick it past and get on it. Admittedly, he did kick it into touch on one occasion, but never mind.
He did put it on a plate for Rodrigo as well, didn't he? So he should be allowed to count that as an assist.
And beating people, as you are the coach within our cohort, that's good, isn't it, running past people?
Mm.
Should we do that more?
Because then they're behind you and you're on your way to the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't stop. If they're not between you and the goal, they can't do anything.
You could run towards it then, can't you?
Yeah. You've just got a clear run then until someone else comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go past them as well.
Just rounding up the other ones then, who else we got? I mean, Forshaw gets plenty as well for his midfield antics. Anything in particular there that we need to single out, or was it just his overall brilliance?
A gift from God, he's described as. Which is a gift from Rob Price, should we say, at least. But Ender's just saying, imagine coming back to playing at such a high level after 2 years out with an injury. And it is fair enough. I think everyone is amazed by how well he is done.
Andrea Ratrazzani's not.
I think even he is probably thinking a little bit like,
we'll go away with that one.
But yeah, it's just the level of fitness he seems to have as well. I think that's the thing. I think we would all forgive him if he looked absolutely knackered after an hour of playing as he is, that he's putting, you know,
as we gasp up the stairs.
Two really good energetic performances within a few days of each other, and it's amazing. In a weird way, I'm partly wondering if his injury might do him good in the long run.
I'm sure he would sort of agree with that. Yeah.
But because I feel like people appreciate him more now, and maybe he's more focused than he was before. Maybe that's completely unfair. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
But having had to really work for it to get back to this, if he's now desperate to take his opportunity.
Staring down the barrel of it being taken away from him for 2 years. So to come back, he's going to feel free, isn't he? Like, it's just brilliant. I mean, he's run over 12 kilometres. I've just done the maths on that. That's 7.5 miles he's running.
And it's not a jog either. It's a constant sprint as well. He's playing in our midfield.
And he's come back having to play a higher level than when he got injured as well, which must have made it so much harder.
Yep. Potter gets nominations for putting the boring Brighton fans back in their box. I think fair enough. Not going to be a hero for me, but
yep.
And Dan M, this is not me, but says Potter is a Solihull legend, telling his own fans to fuck off. Future Leeds manager ? Would you take Potter in years to come?
I don't know, maybe. It's hard to say because they never scored any goals.
Yeah.
The problem is it's one of those things that if Brighton got a striker and were suddenly really good, probably Scum would take him or something. And then we wouldn't get him. It'd be a gamble that we can provide him with Tyler Roberts.
Right, let's pick a hero of the week then, please.
I don't think Dallas had enough praise there, actually.
Okay.
For the Aiden, for not letting that cheating fucker Zaha sniff all night.
Yeah.
So that was fair enough. And he was just brilliant. Soldier Wilson describing him as the beating heart of LUFC, pretty much a saint.
He is. He was great. He's been great for the last couple of games, hasn't he?
I've really enjoyed him getting back to his best after a slow start to the season. There's a picture, Adam Forshaw posted a picture on Instagram last night of the moment Rafinha scores the penalty, and you've got Forshaw in one side looking like Stuart Pearce at Euro 1996, and then at the other side, Dallas is just leaping into the air, into shot, which is brilliant.
Yeah, Matt from Munich for being an all-round fucking superstar and cupping Rafinha's bollocks
He had the bollocks to touch Rafinha's bollocks, and I imagine it's a brave man who does that.
I wouldn't encourage it generally. It mainly will be considered a sexual assault, but I think that between them there was an understanding it was fine.
Yeah.
So just know who you're cupping. Yep. That's all I'll say.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Always get permission. Right, hero of the week.
I'd be tempted by Dallas, I think. He was really good last night. He was all right against Brighton. He saved us from Firpo moving to left back.
That's true.
So yeah, I'd be tempted by Dallas.
I think Melier's in with a good shout.
Yeah, I'd be tempted Melier.
It's a tough one, isn't it? It is genuinely a tough one this week.
Trying to work out who's more directly won us points. I mean, we definitely wouldn't have drawn at Brighton without Melier.
It does feel like he is going under the radar a little bit as well. Like you've said, that he is a contender for player of the year if it wasn't for Rafinha, maybe.
Should we go Melier this time?
Yeah.
Okay. Melier with a certificate of commendation for Stuart Dallas.
Well, Stuart Dallas gets chance. Melier doesn't have any chance, does he?
No.
So this needs to even it up a bit.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain names that just don't scan into chance or don't immediately seem obvious, and he needs one.
What rhymes with Melier? Not easy.
We need a Mon Bebe chant, don't we?
Yeah. Well, let's leave that one with the listener/viewer, and if anybody can think of anything, then come back to us. But what you tend to find with these is it tends to be like a full song that's out there. And what you need is something simple and that you can repeat.
It'll actually be France's number one, won't it?
Yeah,
that's what will be sung at him at some stage, probably.
Okay. Well, we'll go away and we'll think about that. See what we can come up with. So there you go, Melier, hero of the week, wrapping up the weekly show for this week. More of the same next week after we've beaten Brentford, Michael.
1.2 points.
Nice one, Rob. Right, well, we'll catch you in a bit. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.